G'day, Tom Uren here, and today I have an interview with Heather Atkins, Google's Vice President of Security Engineering. First of all, I'd like to thank both the Cyber Initiative at the Hewlett Foundation and corporate sponsor Proofpoint for their support. This interview was really kicked off by the release of a Google web series called Hacking Google that starts off with Operation Aurora, a 2009 hack of Google by a Chinese state-sponsored group. This was a defining moment for Google and ultimately led to a transformation in its operations, what Heather called changing the battlefield. In this interview, Heather talks about the impact Aurora had and how it changed Google's approach to security and doing business.
What we know from Aurora is there were at least 20 other victims. I talked to all 20.
Yep.
And we've never named and shamed them. We've never outed them. That's really quite a personal decision from those companies' perspectives. But what I will say is that a few of them did actually take up that mantle as well. And I think it's important to recognize that the leadership in any entity is very important, because you are, of course, making substantial changes to your business, your IT architecture, the way your employees work. And so there does need to be a leadership component there. But there also needs to be a security thought leadership that can help the organization navigate the difficult change management. Some of the changes we made were actually fairly straightforward, but then we made substantial changes like, let's invest in fixing authentication. And we formed the FIDO Alliance with our partners in the industry, started inventing new standards, rolled out security keys. And when we look now at the ubiquity of multi-factor authentication, we're in a very different world. It's not a perfect world. It's not where we want to go eventually, but we're in a much better state than we were in 2009.
Yep.
I would also say that, we're talking a lot about different ways to construct IT architectures, enterprise architectures. There's this phrase you hear thrown around a lot, zero trust. We did that. We lived it. It was a over 10-year journey. In some parts, we are still transforming ourselves, challenging ourselves to think about, what does a world look like where, we don't trust any of the people on the network, any of the devices on the network, any of the data on the network. How do we validate everything? These are transformational mind shifts, big stuff.
Yeah. So it seems that you're saying Google's taken 10 years to get to a place that's better. And to me, it just seems like there's now a groundswell of support maybe for that kind of zero trust mindset. And so that tells me that perhaps the world's got at least 10 years to get to a better place.
Well, there's a few things there, Tom. I think the first is that because of the rapid acceleration of cloud, both infrastructure as a service, software as a service, platforms as a service, that a lot of new companies starting up are starting on cloud first. And actually, it makes the zero trust architecture just slightly easier. You don't have, massive campuses of buildings with, mainframes in them, and these are very hard to transition. So if you're a small to medium-sized business now, you're probably, investing a little bit in technology. You're probably on a cloud platform or two. And actually, the story there is much simpler.
Right.
What I would say about kind of more established companies, like the situation Google was in, is that it probably won't take 10 years. We had to invent a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to try a lot of things. We tried a lot of things and failed and then had to try again. Yep. And more importantly, we've put everything we learned back into the ecosystem. And so as more mature companies are making technology choices, transitions, and modernizing, which they will do because of, it's how you survive in business, they now have better choices than we did. And so my hope is actually that, a lot of the banks, a lot of the kind of medium to large size businesses have better solutions on the market. I also have a little bit of hope for governments, although I think the jury is still out on how I feel about technology transformations in entities that have, been around for hundreds or thousands of years. Like, that's a much harder problem. But I think I see it's going in these directions. I do think it's another probably 10 to 20 year journey before all of the vision is really realized.
One thing I'm really interested in is how you get to the point of deciding what you need. So I suppose you went and looked at what had happened during Aurora and went, here are the problems. And then you had to go and figure out what the solutions were. But, and I'm guessing that you didn't wake up on January the 13th and went, right, we need to change the battlefield.
No.
There must have been a journey that you went on to get to that point.
I would say some of those conversations began at about hour one of the response, where you're like, oh, wow, that definitely bypassed all of our assumptions and let's do that differently. But here I would credit just really incredible engineers at Google. We feature a few of them in the video. What you don't see are the many other hundreds that participated in everything from, you know, the forensics exercise to the recovery to actually re-architecting.
Yeah, that was one thing I was interested in is that process because of that incident. And I guess other stuff happens. You must identify flaws or problems or gaps, and then what, you just sit around and brainstorm what's the ideal, maybe not the ideal, but what's a good solution for this, a practical solution, and then you just try it and then suck it and see.
We do a lot of prototyping and we pick the low-hanging fruit to experiment with. You know, the idea that we were going to get rid of VPN for the corporate network is a really great example where we thought, what are the obvious services that really don't need to be behind the VPN, like the cafe menus or the shuttle stops, right?
Yep.
And actually, this is kind of relatively low-risk data as well if we get it wrong. And then also looking at the user base of, you know, well, we know how the engineers work. They work one way. Finance works another way. You know, the people who sell ads work another way. Are there any users in here that would be easier to experiment with? And can we make a partnership with them to start carefully teasing out a few things that no longer require VPN? And in the process of doing that, we do it in a relatively safe way. So good change management. The users are really happy because they no longer have to VPN in, which is great. Nobody likes VPNs, at least not corporate VPN.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we get to see where we're going to fail and improve, right? And then at some point you reach a momentum where you have enough of the right solutions, you know, enough of the things that can go wrong. And more importantly, you have users now clamoring for the feature because they know that the marketing team is using it and look how great their life is. They want to now adopt it too. So you get this sort of very virtuous launch process. And actually, this happened to us when we launched Security Keys because we had been using token-based numerical one-time passwords, which nobody liked because they're time-based and you have to like wait for the next one if you type it in wrong. And then suddenly we had Security Keys and I was shocked that we actually had a line outside of our tech stop. They were in such demand that people were lining up to get them because it was a much better solution, also much more secure. So I think, you know, if you can think about rolling out IT security improvements and the way that we would think about launching amazing products to people, then actually you get all the benefits of usability, security, privacy, and great user experiences. And in many, many businesses can also realize cost efficiencies by modernizing some of their IT stacks. There is actually a sweet spot in the middle of all of this. But as you might imagine, as I've described, that's a marathon. It takes a long time if you're inventing it from scratch, which we were. And so we were in the process of doing all those experiments and rolling it out in stages as we learned along the way. And one of the things I want to pitch is that if you're a company in that situation where, look, you've had a major incident and you know you're going to have to do everything differently, we brought the engineers into the room with us to see it firsthand, to see what the kill chain looked like, what the actor was able to do.
Right, okay. Yeah.
And said, hey, look, you build these systems, help us fix this. I feel like a lot of companies, because they operate in a, you know, for various reasons, whether it's, you know, cultural siloism or they're siloed because they have regulatory risk or comms risk or whatever, the people who have to fix things never get to feel it or see it directly and to learn how does hacking work. It's another reason why we did the Hacking Google series. It's actually, I want every Googler to watch that and learn how it works because that's going to help them when they go to build these solutions and to build safe systems by default. you need the people who design, implement, maintain, you need them to be security people. And I say this to Googlers, I say, you know, I've got security in my title, but actually every employee is a member of the security team. And I really do truly believe that.
Yeah. So in a way, the cultural aspects that you're talking about make me somewhat pessimistic about other companies, in that culture is just hard to change, right? And your comment about being, I don't know if you said worried about governments, but sort of expressing some concern about the change governments make, made me think that, like, at least in an Australian context, the way the government IT is set up is based on the current paradigm. And it's the way that you would get to something different is actually very, very difficult. And similarly, having all companies have that kind of cultural security is everyone's business doesn't seem to be the norm. And I'm not sure that just employing zero trust as a mind shift gets us there.
Yep. And I think one thing to keep in mind is that, you know, as the, you know, as we've lived this journey over kind of last, I guess, almost 13 years now, you know, our own business has evolved. We've become one of the leading cloud platform providers. And one of the things we've really focused on is how to get these solutions in the hands of customers. You know, in 2009, we actually had good Chrome usage. Now, you know, today we really believe Chrome is the most secure browser. And we have Chrome OS, which actually a good portion of our workforce uses. And we've committed to giving all this to the world as well. And so the benefit of us making the cultural shift is that the solutions we provide to the world have this culture baked into the technology and how the technology is built. So if you're a dentist, if you are a teacher, if the Department of Education here in the United States and you want a Google solution, you're going to get that culture from us just by the very nature of the adoption of the technology. And so I think when we think about the governments who are not going to go build their own operating system and they're not going to go build their own browser, I suppose some are attempting. We'll see how successful they are. But you are...
Well, they'll build a browser, just probably not a very secure one.
Well, it'll probably just be Chrome underneath. It was sort of the reality of how things go. But that culture you get around security is really going to be about your vendor choices, right? Because you're either going to be with a vendor who builds, you know, solutions by default that are secure, or you're not. And that's what it comes down to, right? Because you are essentially, you know, a government is essentially an IT aggregator, right? You're aggregating technology to build a stack that you can run the government on top of. And it matters. Your choices matter in those cases.
Yeah. So one of the interesting things you mentioned earlier on is that the Aurora event incident resulted in the creation of a whole lot of Google teams. And I was wondering where this expansive view of security came from, which maybe again goes back to the founders, perhaps. But it would be easy for Google to say, okay, we had a problem, we need to fix our network. Okay, we're in a better place, job done. Mm-hmm. But that's really not what TAG or Project Zero is about at all.
Yeah.
So why do you care?
Well, it's interesting. So we profile five teams in the Hacking Google series. I might just mention each one. Mm-hmm. You know, detection response is probably the most natural one to really come out of Aurora. We were very lucky to be able to partner with Mandiant during Aurora. And we, you know, Mandiant's now part of the Google Cloud family. So it's good to have them on board. And you've probably heard Mandiant say this a whole lot of time. Kevin Mandy is always talking about, you know, these are advanced and persistent threats. Yes, we ejected them in January of 2010, but they're going to come back, right? And that is the nature of the threat. And so we just kind of knew instinctively, hey, look, we need a real, you know, meaningful, deeply technical, advanced, I think a phrase was thrown around at the time, you know, military grade, whatever that means, you know, team to be on the lookout. You need a team on the lookout all the time. And that also goes for our threat analysis group, right? Because you need to study how these threat actors work. I would rather build an architecture based off of intel from TAG than intel from my forensics team who's had to look at something that already happened, right? So I want as much advanced warning as I can possibly get. So these two teams are fairly straightforward. And then there are three teams that we kind of start after this time that not directly related to Aurora, but directly related to some of our findings. You know, Aurora begins, for Google at least, with an Internet Explorer vulnerability. It's a bug that Microsoft had known about and had planned to fix it. But before they had a chance to get the patches out, it was dual discovered and used against a number of victims. And that was kind of a, like, we all kind of knew that was happening, but I think we didn't all realize just how dependent we were on third-party software. We were Adobe users, we were Microsoft users, we were using printer drivers from various vendors, right? The whole IT stack is built on third-party code. Well, where else do we have vulnerability, right? And finding vulnerabilities in that code was as much about defending Google, right? Because we want them closed down to defend ourselves, but also to help the ecosystem build a bit of resiliency, right? And the Project Zero team is really focused on, you know, no more zero days, which they know is sort of unachievable. But, you know, the idea is that we all as a community come together and say, look, we want to build better software. We want to build more secure software, right? So it's really about kind of nudging that conversation forward, while at the same time defending ourselves. And then we have the Bug Hunters team. And this team has evolved quite a lot over the last 13 years. It started out with a Chrome VRP program, a vulnerability rewards program, and we have expanded it over time. And it's now this really sophisticated network of external researchers that we have deep engagement with to encourage them to, you know, find what we've missed, find what we don't know, work with us to help make the ecosystem better, not just Google software, but also open source software. And then finally, the Red Team, which is a team of professional hackers who I get to watch hack Google every day. And this, again, for me is a way of, you know, testing our own biases. When you're building the system, maintaining the system, running the system, you kind of know it, you kind of like overlook some of the flaws sometimes. And you're like, oh, that'll be fine. The Red Teams really challenge your biases there. And that is really useful intelligence for us as a defense team to go fix what we broke. And so we tell this amazing story of how they've been hacking Google for the last decade or so, and how we use that to kind of transform the way we defend Google and the world as well. So yeah, they're all tied together, maybe not necessarily obviously, but you know, it all ties back to these big macro learnings from the incident.
Yeah. I was wondering also, you've got these teams and you spoke about inviting engineers in, not security engineers, to see what had happened. Were there any other culture change pieces around security at Google? I am thinking you've created the teams and you've invited people in, but was there actually an active culture change type program? Because those programs are very common and I'm always very skeptical about them, mostly because culture is just hard to change, I suppose.
Culture is hard to change, and you can't change culture through educational videos, and you can't change culture through flyers on the wall. We found that people really needed to live it. They really needed to be a part of it. And so bringing engineers into the war room, bringing engineers into red teams, you know, we do talks, but they're very interactive talks. Mm-hmm. Doing rotation programs where engineers will come and join us for 6 months and work on a particular problem so they can see it firsthand.
Yep.
All of these things are good at changing culture, but culture takes 5 to 10 years to change.
Yep.
I will say, though, as an advocate for transparency, the blog post we made on January 12th of 2010 was also written for Google employees.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that was sort of our way of saying, really sorry we made you change your passwords and cut your VPN off. We promise it was for a good reason. And by the way, we would never do it unless it was a good reason. So trust us. But then also to say, to set the stage for everything's changed. And we're gonna be aggressive in protecting our users. And so I think companies who are making the choices to, you know, not just do your regulatory notification and all the things you have to do, but if as a leader, your CEO, your CFO are also thinking about what needs to change with the people who are on the ground every day to defend the company. You get to talk to them as well, right?
What was the internal reaction to that blog post? Did you get people calling you up like, oh my God?
How can I help? That was probably the number one response.
Yeah, right.
How can I help? And I, you know, I do think this is a particular Google cultural thing, which has always existed since the day I got there to even today, is that there really is a focus on the user. And, you know, focus on the user, all else will follow. And so, you know, we feel a deep affinity with, you know, the people we're protecting, you know, billions of people on the planet. It's another reason why we made the Hacking Google video, right? To kind of show our users and our customers that, you know, these aren't just business processes, which they are, and these aren't just, you know, jobs, which they are, but these are, you know, people who really take the job seriously and who understand the implications. And so I was not surprised at all that, you know, most of the first responses we got were, how can I help? Or should I change this thing? Or and then, of course, the paranoia kicks in and they're like, oh, you know, I saw a dog walking down the street. What if it's got a bug on its back? Should we be worried about spies? Right. You know, sort of had the paranoia kick in, too. But if you were at Google at that time, you remember where you were when you heard it and you remember how you felt about it.
Mm. And the other interesting thing is that it seems that you've got an enduring change at Google. Well, I guess perhaps the question is, what do you think there was a change in priority of security before and after?
Well, I would say we always prioritized security. I mean, we had a pretty big team even at the time for the size of the company and kind of what was going on in the industry. And that's not to count, you know, all the engineers who were also doing security as part of their job. I would say that our view on what the trajectory was changed. And that we then threw not just security team resources behind that, but lots of engineering resources who build the infrastructure. And that's still the culture today. You know, we talk a lot about how do we build these controls deep into our infrastructure to make them secure by default.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So that sounds to me like you're vaguely optimistic about security.
No, not at all. Do I sound optimistic? I'm totally pessimistic every day. But I think when I look at kind of where things were 25 years ago, you know, we were like, oh, Radius is a great solution and let's authenticate everything with PAM modules. And gosh, I remember trying to configure Sendmail and it was such a difficult configuration and how could you possibly secure this thing? Look, we're in a really different world now where, you know, basic IT infrastructure, you can actually buy a solution in 5 minutes and set your business up. You don't have to go invest time in a Unix sysadmin who's an expert in, you know, M4 files or whatever, right? So I do think it's better. And I think the solutions are better if people are making the right choices. And if we continue on this for 10 to 20 years, I think we'll feel pretty good about where we've come.
Yeah, and at that point, I'll be retired, so I don't have to worry if cybersecurity is just a solved problem. Some of what you were saying is very optimistic about security. And I was interested when you said that you were pessimistic about security every day. So how does that actually work? I'm an optimist and I just get to stay optimistic, I guess.
Yeah, it's difficult because the work of building really secure infrastructure is a marathon. And every once in a while, you really just want to go faster. When is this all going to be over with? When are we done? But the reality is that the work is a marathon. And so you have to sort of balance, you know, and here I'm talking just, you know, kind of leadership qualities. You have to balance keeping the team focused long-term and celebrating the sprints that get you between the milestones. And then you have to make sure you're not sprinting all the time because people burn out and they get tired. And this is a really explicit choice that we make as leaders in a team. We're really blessed at Google that we've invested so deeply over so many years, and we have people who've been around for a really long time. But the idea that you take what many companies would see as chaos of somebody installed malware today, oh, another toolbar. Goodness, why couldn't they get a legitimate copy of WinZip? We pay for that. Like, why do you need to download it off of, you know? A lot of companies are buried under this noise. You got to get rid of the noise. And that allows you to have clarity on the bigger problems and allow the team to really run the long race rather than sprinting in a panicked mode, you know, surging towards danger every day, right? And that's tricky. And I know a lot of teams who really want to make that transition, but haven't quite been able to flip the bit. And again, I think this is where secure by default solutions, you've got to erase some of these noisy problems to let, you know, your teams focus on the really good stuff. So you asked about optimism and pessimism, and this is kind of tied to it in that, you know, Log4j. I think lots of people had to mitigate Log4j. For some organizations, they were quite lucky and got done quickly. And for many, it went on for a long time. Some are still trying to wrestle with this risk. That's definitely a pessimistic moment in cybersecurity. And you're like, oh, this is never going to be fixed. Like, goodness, why don't we know where we have Log4j? I just want to upgrade. But then I'm actually really enthusiastic by some of the work coming out of the White House, out of CISA here in the United States, through the open source initiatives with Linux Foundation, Apache Foundation, and others, who are saying we actually kind of conceive what the solutions are. Like, the solutions are in sight. We don't know how yet to implement them at scale necessarily, but we can conceive it, right? We can see it. And that gives me optimism, right? I'm, on the one hand, we're still dealing with a mess. And on the other hand, I'm very optimistic because I can see the solutions just over the horizon.
That seems like a great place to end. Thanks very much, Heather.
Of course. Thank you, Tom.